Good afternoon. Nice intimate crowd. Like that. I'll try not to talk too fast. I'm a fast talker, eighth of nine children. Always wanted to get my point across. And I just want to thank you so much for welcoming our papers and the award. I guess you said Aetna's been doing this for maybe a decade or more. And last night going to the physical activity and public health section, and the energy in the room was really exciting. This is my first meeting, and I'll be back. And Anna, are you still here? Hi, Anna. Anna Albrecht is here with me as well. She's from the Women's Health Foundation. So we're this great combination of academia and community service, and we are thriving together. So thank you. There are no personal financial relationships that is closed. I will say that we got funding for this from the Pfizer Foundation, and actually prior to this we had another smaller study that was funded by the Research Retirement Foundation, and we are hopeful to keep getting more funding to get a bigger study going. So having said that, okay, I'm going to jump right into it. We did a study looking at urinary incontinence complaints in older women. I'll tell you more later about why that's so very important. I wanted to give you a couple little definitions. So urinary incontinence can be either stress, where you do something that increases your intra-abdominal pressure and you leak urine, like you laugh, you cause, you know, you cough, you sneeze. Maybe it's happening already. Urge is when you got to go, you got to go, the key's in the door, and you better be on that toilet, otherwise you're in trouble. So you may or may not leak, depends on how fast you are. No kidding. If you try to go too fast and you fall and break your hip, that's definitely a problem. So mixed is when you have some symptoms of both, and overflow is suddenly you have your loss of urine without any sensation at all. These are all types of urinary incontinence, and we care about this from a public health perspective because of not only the direct but the indirect costs of urinary incontinence. $30 billion annually, which basically is related to testing, surgeries, medications, over-the-counter treatments, all kinds of things that women do on their own. Then there's things like missing work, missing your bridge game, unfortunately being admitted to a nursing home, all kinds of indirect costs that come from urinary incontinence. It's greater than the direct cost of all the kind of female cancers that we hear a lot about combined. And the lifetime medical cost for a woman with urinary incontinence is 80% higher than women without it. So it really is an important thing personally, multi-level, for the community, for the financial system. 1 in 10 women will have surgery for incontinence or prolapse. Okay, so we're heading for possible surgical intervention. Greater than 1 million doctor visits per year as a primary diagnosis. They cost the healthcare system $6,000 more a year than a woman who does not come in with urinary incontinence. Having said that, they don't always reveal that they have urinary incontinence, and if they did, they'd get into this higher visit, higher cost group. And most important for us is this idea that nursing home admissions are directly related to your pelvic floor fitness. If you're leaking urine or leaking feces, you may be leaving your home sooner than later. So one of our ideas was to try to intervene on these women before they were on that trajectory to be admitted to a nursing home. So again, indirect costs of urinary incontinence, women spend $900 a year for routine UI care, so they're buying disposable pads, they're buying other products, laundry, again, time loss from work, and believe it or not, one-third of menstrual pads are really being bought for incontinence. Women don't want to say they're incontinent, so they go in and buy menstrual pads, which don't work real well, especially if you have, you know, major urinary incontinence. And then, of course, larger than that are the negative impacts on your quality of life. Decreased social activity, you aren't physically active because you're afraid you're going to leak urine. This leads to depression, interrupted sleep for any of you that have been up to go to the bathroom at night. It's really interrupted a lot of your life if you can't sleep well. And then I mentioned the risk of falls, fracture, and that sort of, we all know the trajectory of an older woman who falls and breaks her hip, mortality or morbidity-wise. UI is rated with Alzheimer's and stroke as the chronic health condition that most adversely affects quality of life in this age group. So we're going to hear more about some of those other conditions today. So what are some of the risk factors? Well, childbirth and age, maybe we don't have a whole lot of impact on. We're not telling women, hey, don't have children because you're going to end up being incontinent. There's also a lot of controversy about C-section versus vaginal delivery. I would say the jury isn't quite out yet, or the jury is still out, so we won't talk about that today. But things like surgery, diabetes, constipation, and obesity are kind of modifiable risk factors. I hate to use the term obesity after the last conference I just attended, which talked about obesity and the negative connotations, but there are some medical data that links those two together. And obviously, your pelvic health problems increase with weight gain or maybe lack of fitness, and then there is some study that shows incontinence decreases with weight loss. But again, age is a big risk factor, quote unquote. That's why we're here with this group today, the exercise in older women. So what are some of the health trends in the U.S., which again, I need to update my slides after my last conference. maybe carrying extra weight, you know, with the graying of our population. And people, you know, women really wanting to have long, healthy, interactive lives. So they don't want to be home, you know, having to run to the bathroom. They don't want to know where every single toilet is between their home and their friend's bridge game, which they do know. I work at Rush University Medical Center, where I work with a group of physicians, including colorectal surgeons and urologists and urogynecologists, and we tackle pelvic floor problems that relate to urine, feces, sexual dysfunction, inability to exercise. And I had this wonderful relationship with the Women's Health Foundation, which is a community-based foundation in Chicago, who really wanted to shift the paradigm from disorder to pelvic wellness. And they do that from adolescent kiddos all the way up through senior women. And in fact, the women in our study, one woman said to one of our instructors, maybe even Anna, "Hey, I'm 85. Why am I just now hearing about my pelvic floor muscles incontinence? How come you're not teaching my granddaughter who's 13? So the thing the foundation is working on, in addition to all their other, is looking at adolescents and what they know about their pelvis and organs and muscles and is it normal to leak urine and talking about things that women and girls just don't talk about. They also are, as a foundation, really want to go medically evidence-based, if you will. So they've chosen a great group of people to be on their board and to help develop their programs. And they actually pilot tested a program called Total Control, which was pilot tested in women of all ages. And it was a program that was lying down and standing using an exercise ball where we focus on the pelvic muscles but also posture, so trunk muscles. And then there's a content around the right way to go to the bathroom and how long you should wait between urinating, so kind of toileting programs. And we decided to take the Total Control program and put some gray hair on it, so we called it the Total Control Platinum. And we pilot tested this study in women who were older, over 65, and was done from a chair and standing rather than getting down on the ground because we weren't sure if all of our participants could function that highly. So our aim was to pilot the efficacy and the acceptability of this adapted group pelvic fitness and educational program for women over 65. They were in residential independent living, so we were trying to intervene while they were still living independently, and they self-reported urinary incontinence and overactive bladder symptoms based on those kind of definitions I told you all about at the beginning. These are some of the muscles that we kind of call out and teach them about. So the transverse abdominis is a large girdle-like muscle across in front of you. It's that one that you kind of suck in when you're trying to put those skinny jeans on. Now, a lot of our 85-year-olds didn't know about skinny jeans, so we couldn't really use that analogy. And when we asked them to lay their hands on their lower abdomen, that was a bit much the first week. And little by little, they sort of became more comfortable. And by the end of it, we have a wonderful video on YouTube where women talk about how wonderful it is to talk to their girlfriend at their you know, independent living center about their pelvic floor muscles. So they came a long way, baby, within the 6 weeks of our intervention. But we want to talk about the spine and the pelvic floor because all these muscles work together. And we've all talked about the core for years, but never kind of including the pelvic floor. So the Total Control Platinum Fitness and Educational Program is a 60-minute fitness and education, about 30 minutes of fitness and 30 minutes of education. It was taught in community-based independent living centers, and the intervention group came in twice weekly for 6 weeks. We had what we called an alternative intervention group, which basically came in one time for a lecture, education only, and they were given a booklet, and our booklet is called You Go Girl, But Only When You Want To. And this is our updated version for our Total Control Platinum, which is in larger font and has a lovely platinum hair lady on the front from our other book, which is a younger woman in smaller font. So they came in for one educational session. We're given the booklet, but we're giving no specific recommendations about muscles and how to use them. We ended up with five groups of 9 to 15 women because we had a couple, we had two different sites and we had different times a day that the group would meet. We recruited them by posting and mailing recruitment flyers at each of three participating residential facilities. You had to either live in one of the facilities or you were an outside community member who came there to use the fitness center or other non-residential programs. And we looked at validated survey tools. So we looked at the SF-12. There are validated surveys for overactive bladder and incontinence. One is called the Urogenital Distress Inventory, and there's a short form, so there were six questions. There's an incontinence impact questionnaire, or the IIQ, which has seven in its short form. There's the timed up and go test, because I was particularly interested to look at if we were making a change in their function. And then bothersomeness of urinary symptoms, you basically set on a line of 10 centimeters, mark a line by how bothered you are, so how you feel about your symptoms. And then we also asked some questions at the end, some qualitative measures. So a little busy slide here. I just grabbed a couple tables from our paper. This is the pre versus post in the pelvic fitness group, what their UDI 6s look like. And just to cut to the chase, the total score at the top, we showed a significant difference in the score after 6 weeks of the class. And then in four of the six subscales, there were positive. There was a significant difference. In the alternate intervention group with education only, there were no pre and post changes in this measure. And the same goes for the IIQ7. Again, the total score changed significantly before and after class, and five of the seven subscales also were statistically significant. One was very borderline at 0.0525, and the bottom one, emotional havoc, didn't change statistically wise. But again, this is just in the pelvic fitness class. The alternate intervention group had no changes in their pre and post scores. So this just summarizes what I just told you. The total score UDI 6 and 4 of 6 subscales improved, and the total score IIQ 7 and 4 of 7 subscales improved, and one was very borderline, all without significant changes in the alternate intervention group. We also looked at this VAS score, this measuring on a 10-centimeter line of how bothered they were by their symptoms. And in the pre versus post fitness class, there was, again, a statistically significant change. So they were feeling less bothered. They were feeling, I think, more empowered, which was some of the words that they gave us. And we didn't see that change in the alternate intervention group. We also looked at the timed up and go test and found a statistically significant change in the score. Again, in the intervention, but not the alternate intervention group. Other qualitative benefits that they told us about: less urgency at nighttime. They felt better bladder management. They felt more in control. They had increased self-confidence, which again was interesting because we really weren't saying, you know, come and be a more confident 85-year-old. We were saying, come and learn about your bladder, and they felt better about their level of confidence. They also all felt that they had better posture. We didn't really do a measure of that. We did think about taking some pictures pre and post, but it was hard to kind of measure that. And interestingly, 82% planned on continuing the exercises. And we, and probably two of the centers, we left fitness instructors behind that we taught Total Control Platinum to, so they can continue with this fitness class, which is very exciting. And the alternate intervention group, we're all going to be offered the fitness class in the next round.
They were jealous.
They were jealous, that's right. They would sort of lurk by the door. What are you doing in there? Okay, so what are our take-home messages in my, 15-minute spiel here? I'm doing pretty well. For bladder health, we're saying that a community-based wellness program can serve an important role in bridging the gap between consumers and healthcare delivery system and enable women to improve their health and wellness. We also didn't review today the literature, but if women don't talk about incontinence to their doctor, so one of our other hopes was after they were doing the class, they might be then compelled to talk to their physician when they were in to say, hey, I'm doing this class and it's helping me improve my nighttime, incontinence. So maybe it's a nice alternative to medications and surgery. And low-risk, low-cost interventions that occur while older women are still living in independent residential facilities might change the trajectory of their urinary incontinence-related nursing home admission, because we find this to be, the common causes for nursing home admission. So I just want to say again, there's a little bit of information about the Women's Health Foundation on the back. I have this little booklet if you want to come by and talk with me. The references are available if you want to email me. I have our contact information. And lastly, if you want to go look on YouTube under Total Control Platinum, you can see our video of sort of the qualitative experiences that our participants had. And thanks again to the American Public Health Association Aging and Public Health section. Thanks.